Good afternoon, everybody. My name is Ann Demers, and I'll give you a little bit of background about what I've been doing for the last 7 years. I started working with veterans returning from the Iraq and Afghanistan wars in 2004 because I began to see that they were really struggling. I was working with young people on the streets prior to that around issues of sense of belonging and identity and community who were struggling to reintegrate. And I have a son. I'm also the mother of a veteran who was deployed to Iraq 3 times, spent almost 3 years in Iraq. So I spent a lot of time on the base talking to him and his friends and started hearing things after their second deployment that sounded an awful lot like the things that I was hearing from young people on the streets about not belonging, not fitting in, struggling with identity, using substances to cope. And I thought, you know, this is the tip of an iceberg, and somebody needs to start paying attention to this. We're going to have some serious problems down the road. So, I'm at San Jose State University. All right, what were you clicking?
You know why? It's open as a PDF. Okay. Yeah, so you would just have to do like a...
I did the space.
Yeah.
Okay. So there were two of us who were funded to do this work, Blue Shield Foundation of California. And I didn't realize that PDFs popped up like this. This is terrible. I apologize. Blue Shield Foundation of California, a couple of years ago, they are the largest private funder of violence prevention work in California. And they called together an ad hoc advisory group of people from around the nation who were experts, if you will, in the area of family violence, as well as people who'd been doing a lot of work with veterans, because it came to their attention that maybe there might be significant intimate partner violence and child abuse going on in returning veteran families. So they said, we have a pot of money. If we were to spend this money, what do you think we should do with it? So, of course, there were many service providers, program providers, who immediately said, well, you know, we need to expand our programs, and we can certainly start reaching out more to veterans. And as an academic, I said, whoa, let's look at what's going on with veterans before we just, you know, take a program that's already in place and plug them into it. Let's really understand the context in which this violence is occurring. So for the first time ever in their history, they funded a research project. And Dr. Elena Claw is my co-PI. She has a background in psychology, particularly around violence prevention. My background is in public health, primarily mental health issues, and then working with veterans. So we decided to do an interdisciplinary collaboration, which was really nice. Next slide. Thank you. Yes, I'm supposed to read that I have no personal financial relationships with commercial interests relevant to this presentation. Next. Thank you.
I'll be back
today. Okay. So a little bit about the background that got us started with this. We know that to date, approximately 2 million military personnel have deployed to either Iraq and or Afghanistan, and about a third of them are returning with PTSD that's been diagnosed. If you look at the data, though, we find that combat veterans with PTSD display higher levels of violence, or anger, rather, than do non-PTSD combat veterans, so not real surprise there. Anger related to hostile behavior and intimate partner violence. More than 80% of veterans with depression in 2009 reported at least one act of violence against a partner, either slapping a partner in the last year, and more than 40% have committed one severe act, similar to choking, doing something a little bit more extreme. So, next slide. Since we decided that we really wanted to look at veterans who were not already diagnosed necessarily and receiving services, we wanted to veer away from the VA, which is where people typically go to understand more about veterans. And we said, you know, a lot of them are returning to colleges using their GI Bill, so let's look at the population of veterans who are returning to college campuses. What we do know is that in 2007-2008, which is now a bit dated, veterans made up 4% of all undergraduate students across the nation. And we know that the numbers are significantly higher now, just anecdotally, but I don't have any hard data on that yet. Approximately two-thirds of veterans enroll in public universities, and about and they typically go to community colleges first and then transfer in. So they're generally juniors by the time they get into the state's universities, the four-year institutions. 20% of veteran students are disabled, 14% have major depression, 14% PTSD, and 19% probable TBI, traumatic brain injury, all of them risks for partner violence. If we want to look at the economic costs here, you can look at PTSD and depression estimating to cost, and this was actually in 2009, from $4 to $6.2 billion, and I'm sure that those costs are up now even more so. Next slide. Thank you. So the purpose of our study was to examine the risk factors. What's really going on within this particular population? Risk factors for intimate partner violence among the veterans from Iraq and Afghanistan wars. To develop, not just to get the data, but to really to develop culturally competent programs to support them and their partners and ultimately decrease the rates of abuse. So we used a number of methods to recruit veterans from college campuses. We used email listservs at different campuses. We did flyering. We used Craigslists all over the state in order to recruit veterans who had served in the military from 9/11/01. They had to be enrolled in college, and they had to be currently in a partnered relationship. We conducted an anonymous electronic survey, and in it we used a series of standardized measures to look at psychological distress, to look at anger, alcohol and drug abuse, hypermasculinity, social support, adherence to or belief in domestic violence myths, as well as use of conflict tactics. And then they were directed to a second website. This was our little incentive for them to participate. They could enter a drawing for an Apple iPod. Okay. So our results. We actually had 267 veterans who participated in the survey, but for a number of reasons, we had to exclude many of them. They either were no longer in a partnered relationship, or they didn't answer a significant number of the questions. So ultimately, what we ended up with was 131 participants who fully completed the survey, age range 19 to 50 with a mean of 29 years. All branches of the service were represented. And it's interesting, the overall means that we got suggested very low rates of anything clinical in terms of distress, depression, and anxiety, and low rates of intimate partner violence. But when we did an item analysis, it revealed some significant risk groups. So if you look at the data that I've got up here, you know, over a third of them met the criteria for alcohol use disorder. Over a quarter of them were using drugs for non-medical reasons. 28% of them endorsed at least moderate anger, and more than a quarter endorsed adherence to domestic violence myths. Next slide. Thank you. They also reported experiencing some to a huge amount of symptoms of distress, even though the overall means said that they weren't. You look at this, we've got 65% worrying too much about things, over half of them with low energy, feeling slowed down, 43% blaming self for things, and I'm reading all of these to you because it's being recorded. Otherwise, I typically would not read all of this. 39% feeling blue, the same amount loss of interest in things, 34% scary thoughts and images, 31% nervousness or shakiness, 29% feeling trapped or caught. These are distressed individuals. They're not well-functioning individuals, and I'll talk a little bit about this particular population later on in my presentation. Thank you. So when we look at the data for relationships, 80% of them said that they were satisfied with their relationship. But when we broke it down, look at what's happening with anger. 55% saying that there was a moderate to huge amount of anger. A third of them reported, again, feeling lonely, problems in the relationship, low social support. 26% of them said they had no close friends. Over a quarter of them, again, endorsed beliefs related to domestic violence. And if you look at the data on what was happening with them, 68% had insulted or sworn at a partner, about the same amount had shouted at their partner, 12% threatened to hit or throw something at their partner, another 12% grabbing partners, 10% destroying something of their partner, and 28% had insisted upon sex against their partner's wishes. So what we said was that, you know, intimate partner risk is definitely associated with distress. It's definitely associated with hypermasculine attitudes and low levels of social support. So we decided to do hierarchical regression and develop some models to look at what was happening to predict aggression, negotiation tactics, domestic violence, myth adherence, anger, and sexual coercion. Now, all of the models used regression analysis to predict. And the steps included, we had three steps. The first step in all of these models was looking at distress and substance abuse combined. The second step was looking at hypermasculinity. And the third step was looking at social support. So if you look here at psychological aggression, all three steps were significant. Psychological aggression towards a partner was predicted by higher degrees of psychological distress, higher hypermasculine attitudes, and lower levels of social support. Negotiation tactics, only the first step was significant. So looking at the negotiation tactics really were predicted by distress and not much else. Other than the distress and substance use, significantly predicted decreased use of negotiation tactics, which isn't terribly surprising if you've got people who are using substance. Domestic violence myths, two of the three steps were significant. Distress and substance abuse followed by hypermasculine attitudes, again, predicting adherence to or belief in the domestic violence myths. Next. Anger reactions, again, two of three steps. Step one, which is the distress, again, explained almost half of the variability in anger reactions, and then the hypermasculine activity or attitudes were also found to predict anger. So those combined were definitely predictive of anger reactions. And the final one, sexual coercion, again, two of the three steps significant. The first step explained 10% of the variability in sexual coercion, and hypermasculinity, as the second step, explained an additional 4%. So, what the heck did we do with all these data? Well, we decided we needed to take some action. So what we did was created a series of modules, a training, if you will, for veterans specifically on college campuses to talk to them about the transition issues they were facing, the distress, and their relationship issues. We developed 7 modules. You can see they're about transitioning home back into the civilian world because it really is a culture shock for them when they return. They feel very alienated and isolated. How do you deal with feelings? What's a healthy relationship, and how do you develop a healthy relationship? Communication in relationships. We had a section on pulling all that together. Looking at masculinity and gender roles, and getting support around that, and then happiness. And one of the things that we found is that they really do have a warrior mentality. The culture of the military is to strip them down of civilian identity, build them back up in this warrior mode so that they can be successful in coming together and doing the work that they're prepared to do. The problem with that is that what they learn within that culture and what they take on as part of their identity are not necessarily things that translate very well into the civilian world. So we've got to find a way in order to weave those components together when they transition out. So in our evaluation, we evaluated the pilot that we did of the workshops, because our goal is to eventually disseminate this. We want to figure out how do we do best practices when dealing with vets. And we asked them overall, how did they feel about the series of workshops? And these were a few of their responses, saying that they realized that there are many issues regarding being a student and a veteran, and that there's a lot more going on with them than they realized. The notion that they're not alone, they're not the only person with those feelings, that there are resources available. It's amazing how many veterans come out and they really think that there's absolutely nothing available to support them. And then the last one, which I think is really powerful, the realization that, a veteran needs help, that I need help. We asked them what they would tell other veterans who hadn't been participants in the workshops, and they said things like, it's a great opportunity to speak about your feelings. Remember, these are Marines and Army talking about feelings, and seeing how others have felt since leaving active duty. Highly recommending the workshops to every veteran they know. I wish more veterans had access to a similar opportunity. And then again, letting them know that they're not alone, and that it explained the reasons behind some of the troubles that they were having, some of the difficulties and challenges, and providing a safe environment where they were able to allow themselves to be vulnerable and really talk about feelings and challenges, as well as pointing towards helpful resources. And then we asked them what was the most important thing that they learned about healthy relationships, because they all said that they had never really discussed relationships, much less healthy relationships. So the notion that relationships are key to a healthy life, a healthy and happy life, and developing relationships as a skill, that it's something that you can actually learn to have. Being a veteran adds an additional spin to how I relate to people and what I can do to make it better. Self-respect, optimism, the value of a healthy relationship, relationship communication, stress management, personal strengths and weaknesses. We talked with them a lot about their strengths because we thought that that was really important. They need to feel like they're not just losers because they're back out in the civilian world. And looking at their strengths and how do they translate those into a way that's really positive in their civilian life, and in their relationships. And then the last one, I think, speaks volumes about the experience. I'm not the only one struggling with readjusting into society. I've been able to recognize some of the problems I had communicating and being in relationships. Okay. So what are the takeaway messages so far from this? We concluded that an ecological prevention approach is absolutely necessary, and that we cannot pathologize the behavior of all of these individuals, that they're existing on a continuum, and it's really important for us to meet them in such a way that they don't necessarily have to have a clinical diagnosis in order to receive the support and the help that they need, that we can work with community to do this, and that we can actually institutionalize some of the programs. The idea that outreach through discussion groups and workshops is absolutely essential to helping reduce the risk of violence, to address their coping skills, to address issues of mental health. And then the last one is really addressing their strongly held scripts that they have, allowing them to honor that part of their warrior self because they are proud of who they are. They were at the top of their game, and they come back out into the civilian world, and they don't get what they feel is the respect that they deserve. They're not asking for anything that any other individual would get, but they want a recognition that, you know, they're not just 22-year-old, you know, kids, that they've been through significant world experiences and are changed because of it. And the idea of taking that warrior self and who they were before and who they want to become and weaving together an integrated narrative that helps them transition and build their skills for success. So the last thing, what we're doing now currently, we did create a veteran program assistant position, an additional position at the Center for Community Learning and Leadership on our campus. We've developed a course, which we're in the middle of piloting this semester, that's based on the curriculum that we piloted. It's all about transitioning home, transitioning to college, and developing relationships that are based on mutuality. We've done many, many presentations. The most recent one was to over 200 staff and administrators from student affairs departments and programs throughout the state, so within the California State University system. And in this coming spring, we are hosting at San Jose State a conference, a statewide conference, to involve anybody who's working with veterans, either in 2 or 4 year, the community colleges or the 4 year universities, to come to talk about military culture, about transitioning into civilian world. How do we support our vets? How do we help our vets? What are the challenges that they're facing? What can we do as institutional members in and faculty, and also those who are working, providing services to veterans? What are the ways that we can change our programs, that we can work better with vets so that they can be more successful, and ultimately we can reduce the levels of violence in their families? Thank you. Thank you.